Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
First and 10, Wolverines at their own 6. And in the end zone is Spate, looking to throw. Fires it up the middle. Intercepted. It's picked off and running it down Hooker. The right side. And into the end zone is Malik Hooker. His third touchdown of the year. Malik Hooker, Ohio State's 7th pick 6 of the season. And the Buckeyes get the first touchdown of the game on defense.
I guess that you give the ball to Hill and run it right up the middle.
With Hill number 80. Smith is to his left. Hill again, pure power football, muscles in for the maize and blue. Spate drops back, looks in the flat, and delivers it in a touchdown. Khalid Hill has been a power runner all season. Spate steps up, delivers, intercepted. Picked off by Jerome Baker. And Baker's got blockers. Tackled inside the 15, the third Michigan turnover. Weber dives for an Ohio State touchdown.
Tyler Durbin out to try a 24-yard field goal that will tie the game. Here's his kick. It's in the air, and he nails it. Tyler Durbin to tie the game with 1 second to play. Snap to JT Barrett. Fakes a pass, runs it straight ahead, untouched into the end zone. JT Barrett, 7-yard touchdown run to give Ohio State a lead here in overtime.
This is it. Spate across the middle. Hesitation on the call. What a catch. It's the ball game if they can't get half a yard. Keeper. Hit. Right at the marker. The spot will decide it. Delano Hill got there. It looks like it's a first down. It is.
McLaurin and Brown wide right. Weber and Samuel in the backfield with Barrett, who feeds it to Samuel. Sweeping left side. 10-5. Touchdown, Curtis Samuel. And the Buckeyes win it in overtime. A game that they trailed by 10 points. Double overtime. Curtis Samuel sweeps around the left side for the touchdown run to give Ohio State a 30-27 victory over the University of Michigan. And the Buckeye fans spill onto the field in what has been one of the craziest of afternoons in this historic stadium.
But it wasn't a first down. The fish got bitterly disappointed with the officiating today. That spot, the graphic display is the interference penalties. The one not called on us, on Grant Perry, clearly was being hooked before the ball got there. The previous penalty they called on Delano Hill, the ball is uncatchable and by the receiver. See, I'm bitterly disappointed. My view on the first down was as it was that short. But our guys have worked incredibly hard. They have done everything that they could. And they've done it so very well. I'm very proud of our players, yes. Two penalties called all day. Multiple holding penalties let go. Multiple false starts. An official on my side is supposed to be watching that. Is concerned about whether our coaches are in the white or not in the white. And wants us not on the field. Their coaches were on the field, practically in the huddle at times. So now I'm bitter.
My AD at Ford actually used to always tell me, he said, if you can't get that far, you're not a championship team. And we used to talk about that all the time. And I agree with him. That actually crossed my mind. If you can't get that, we're not a championship team anyway. And I know it's a very good defense, a rugged defense, but I got players like JT Barrett. I think we're one of the top teams in the country. But once again, I don't really know that. We go week to week, and I love my players. It's awesome. I've said that many, many, many times. I'm really humbled to be a part of it. You can't ask for better efforts for both. They have great players. We have great players. They're a very well-coached team, so are we. And it's good for the country to see the Big Ten in action like that.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I tell you what, I don't care if you wear scarlet and gray every Saturday, or if you wear maize and blue, or if you bleed those respective colors. Nobody can disagree with that last line from the Urban Meyer press conference that we just heard. Not that it was the last line of the press conference, but the last line that we just had for you. Nobody can dispute that. It is great for the country to see Big Ten football like that on Saturday. And I think what we saw on Saturday very clearly was two of the three best teams in college football on one football field. That's what I believe after watching that game and then watching it almost an entire second time because I, you know, I like many, I DVR'd it, and I watched so much of it twice that I feel like I watched the game twice. And, of course, many of the key plays I watched, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. I don't even know how many times I watched to see if that was a first down on fourth down that JT Barrett kept it on. You heard that cut. You heard that call. You heard Jim Harbaugh angrily declaring there was no first down. You heard Jim Harbaugh angrily declaring that the officiating all day long left more than just a little bit to be desired. You heard Jim Harbaugh angrily declaring that the officiating stunk and that he's proud of his guys in spite of all of that. And you might hear Jim Harbaugh angrily declaring those things. And again, as I mentioned before, if you wear scarlet and gray and bleed thusly, you are going to call him a whiner and a crybaby, and you're going to troll him, and you're going to say, why, you lost, man up, stop being such a baby about it. You're probably loving Urban Meyer, who kind of trolled Harbaugh a little bit, taking a phone call from his wife while he was addressing the media, and using Jim Harbaugh's reputation for liking milk as trolling material. Yeah, that's right. Jim Harbaugh, of course, as you know, he's noted for being at these very, very fancy dinner parties and different engagements, and people are drinking champagne, and he's drinking a glass of milk because he is just like, you know, wholesome, and this is what he does. And that's wonderful, by the way. Good for Jim Harbaugh. But how about Urban Meyer taking a phone call from his wife in the middle of the press conference and then telling the press it was my wife, she asked me to pick up a gallon of milk? If you don't think that that was intentionally trolling Harbaugh, you're not paying enough attention. But no matter who you are, you're going to believe it was great for the Big Ten. You're going to believe that Jim Harbaugh was whining if you wear scarlet and gray. And you're going to believe that Jim Harbaugh was spot on in calling out the injustice of several missed calls if you are bleeding maize and blue. Now, and I'm going to get a lot of this stuff out now, and I'll let you react to it as we go, no matter what color you wear. And I love the fact, by the way, I love the fact that Toledo, Ohio was so prominently featured on the pregame leading up, at least on the ESPN NFL, or excuse me, on the college game day, as the entire crew with Corso and everybody, they were all there in Columbus. And they did features on a lot of different things regarding this game, but they did this special feature, you probably saw it, on Toledo, because Jim Harbaugh was born in Toledo, because Urban Meyer was born in Toledo, because they were born at the same hospital, for goodness sakes, you know, featuring so much of the state line rivalry and all the rest. It was really, really great. So I know there's a ton of people who are going to have a ton of thoughts on this from both sides of the aisle, if you will. This almost sounds political with Ohio State on one side of the aisle and Michigan on the other, the aisle being the state line now. But anyway, I'm going to say this. Ohio State fans are going to call Harbaugh whiner. Michigan fans are going to call Harbaugh right on for pointing out the injustice. And guess what? Both of them are right. Let me say that again. Both of them are right. Jim Harbaugh was right about a ton of missed calls. Maybe, maybe not on the first down call. Maybe, maybe not. Because I've seen many different views, and I have seen, you know, arguments where the angles look like, yeah, he made it with forward progress and then got driven back and landed short of the line. Other views where it looks like he never got there. He landed short of the line because he was short of the line to gain. And so therefore it should have been Michigan's victory. So I get that. But there were many calls, particularly on pass interference calls, some called on Michigan and not called, the non-calls on Ohio State, that absolutely make Jim Harbaugh right. But having said that, Jim Harbaugh was indeed whining. He was indeed whining and not owning the fact that his football team lost the football game because his football team lost the football game. Now, why do I emphasize it that way? I emphasize it that way because after watching it and reviewing it and reading about it and listening to it and all the rest for the last 3 days, essentially, counting, you know, Saturday night and all day Sunday and most of the day today, I firmly believe that the Ohio State Buckeyes, the number two rated team in the college football playoff, did not win that game. The University of Michigan lost that game. Make no mistake about it. Michigan gave the game away in a variety of ways. which is why it makes Jim Harbaugh whiny when he's complaining about, correctly, a number of missed calls. You see, it wasn't an official that threw a horrible pass from 5 yards deep in his own end zone to an Ohio State linebacker that was returned for the first touchdown of the game. That was just a horrible play made by a very courageous, for most of the game, Wilton Spate. That's just a horrible throw. It was a gift touchdown to the Buckeyes. That's 7. None of the officials that Harbaugh complained about during the postgame press conference, and again, we should hear that again. Let's make sure that we know exactly what we're talking about. Here's Jim Harbaugh.
The officiating, I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today. That spot, the graphic display is the interference penalties. The one not called on us, on Grant Perry, clearly was being hooked before the ball got there. And the previous penalty they called on Delano Hill, the ball is uncatchable and by the receiver. See, I'm bitterly disappointed in the officiating. Can't make that any more clear. It was not, my view of the first down was it was that short.
And he held his hands about probably 6-8 inches apart when he did that, just FYI for the visual there. Now, let me get back to it. He might be right on all of those. I don't think it's as clear cut on the first down mark, but he might be right. In fact, I think he is right on all the interference ones that he's discussing, to be honest with you. But none of those plays were as big as Wilton Spate's second interception from deep in his own end that Ohio State quickly turned into their only offensive touchdown of the football game. In regulation. We know they scored twice in the overtime, which is something else that I'll get to in a bit. But they did not score, the Buckeyes, on the Michigan defense in the entire game on offense, with the exception of that very short field because of a Wilton Spate interception. And that, again, was a terrible throw. It wasn't like some spectacular play made by a Buckeye defender. So Harbaugh needs to understand that his quarterback, while playing very, very courageously with the injured shoulder or collarbone or whatever it is that they won't tell us, while he did play courageously, he did make those two enormous mistakes. That's 14. And then, of course, the fumbled snap. CYO / Pop Warner / grade school / middle school football 101. You cannot fumble snaps. Not at that level, not at any level. On the 2-yard line going in, that's 21 points the Wolverines gave away in one fashion or another. The 7 on the pick 6, the 7 on the other pick, which led to a quick 6. And then the 7 that you should have gotten that you didn't because you fumbled on your own 2. And Ohio State was not stopping Michigan on that drive. Michigan marched down the field on that drive like, you know, the proverbial hot knife through butter. I mean, honestly, it was just, they were clicking on all cylinders, throwing, running. Nothing Ohio State could do at that moment in time was going to stop them except what? A Michigan mistake. So guess what? That was the game. The game wasn't lost on the pass interference plays that Jim Harbaugh complained about in the postgame press conference. The game wasn't even lost. I mean, technically it was, because on the conversion, the fourth down conversion, which was such a very, very close call, but it really wasn't even lost then, because it shouldn't have been in overtime or double overtime if Michigan doesn't make those mistakes that they made on their own. And that's something Jim Harbaugh needs to own. His guys need to own that. That was the game, plus one other thing. I started tweeting. I neglected live tweeting the game. I did not want to live tweet the game because I just wanted to enjoy it. I wanted to watch it, and I wanted to see what happened. And quite frankly, for 50-plus minutes of the football game, I watched Michigan dominate Ohio State. And I'm sitting there watching the Buckeyes going, what in the H? How in the world can you not move the ball? I know Michigan has a great defense, but JT Barrett couldn't throw it from me to Cushlin without it bouncing or sailing. They couldn't throw. The running room, the only time they really got any running room is on delayed handoffs. You know, for crying out loud, why am I forgetting the name of the offense when they started to run that? What Kaepernick runs and RG3 used to run, for crying out loud. You know what I'm talking about. But the delayed handoffs and the fakes and the zone read is what I'm trying to say. There you go. The zone read. on JT running the ball a little bit. And then, of course, you know, when they carried out the fake, he carried out his fake very well, and Samuels or Weber had it. They moved it a little bit, but the offense was terrible against Michigan. And I'm trying to figure out what is going on, but I don't want to tweet about it. I started tweeting about midway through the fourth quarter, and I said the Buckeyes are going to win this game. The Buckeyes have this. Why? When it was still middle of the third quarter, fourth quarter, and Wolverines still had the lead. And I wrote why. I said, look at the difference between Wilton Spate in the first half and really for most of the third quarter and right now. Wilton Spate played a really good, I mean, he made the two terrible mistakes. Don't get me wrong, the picks. But other than that, he also moved his team by making some very good throws, very confident throws all throughout the game. But midway through, maybe late in the third quarter, early in the fourth, he took his first big shot and got driven down into the ground on that shoulder. And you saw him get up very slowly, and you knew full well he was in some serious pain. To his credit, the young man didn't beg out, tap his helmet and say, I got to come out. He stayed in. And he tried to rally his team to victory. And indeed, made in the first overtime a tremendous throw that I didn't know he still had in him. Because of what I was watching, as I tweeted at the time, I said, Michigan is going to lose this game and the Buckeyes have it. And the reason why is no matter how many times Michigan stops Barrett and Ohio State, Michigan's giving the ball right back. And the reason why is because Wilton Spate started getting hit for the first time all day, and he didn't like it one bit. After that first time being driven down into the ground, he was afraid to step up and stand in and deliver the same throws he was delivering in the first half of the football game and for most of the third quarter. He got happy feet. He threw timidly. He wanted to make sure that if he threw, he could pull his arms down and get into the fetal, not the fetal, but I don't mean to say that insultingly, but, you know, the protective shell position where somebody isn't exposed, basically because they're in mid-full throw and full stride. So he threw short-armed. He threw kind of compressed. He threw very conservatively. And I said the Michigan offense is done. They're not running the ball against Ohio State without Spate being able to stretch it out and spread that defense out by throwing it. And Spate wasn't throwing it anymore. So, you know, the way he was. So it was very clear to me that Wilton Spate was not going to be able to carry this team to victory. It was going to have to be the Michigan defense forcing turnovers or something. Because the offense had just got given all it had, I believe. And that's exactly the way it played out, except for the one throw to the tying touchdown in overtime, which was a man-sized throw. He just wasn't playing that way anymore. So I kind of saw that coming. Now, and I told you I got a lot of ground to cover here because there's so much I wanted to say about this game. For the Ohio State Buckeyes, you talk about a team that doesn't panic. You know, I talked most of the week last week in previewing the big game about how teams mimic their coach's personality. And the Michigan team had a swagger that they didn't have in the Brady Hoke years and they didn't have in the Rich Rod years. They play with a swagger and they carry themselves with a swagger that really does mimic that of their head coach, Jim Harbaugh. And it's why I was so glad to see Michigan hire Harbaugh for the greatness of the Michigan program and for the greatness of the Big Ten. And my God, has it worked. Because the Big Ten is the best conference in football now. They got four of the top six teams in the country. It is an amazing thing to see. But anyway, Ohio State's team also mimics the personality of their head coach. What the Ohio State Buckeyes did was they showed a poise and they showed a belief in themselves. One that would not let them panic. One that would not let them freak out that they were trailing, that the Michigan defense was stifling them at every turn. The Ohio State, young Ohio, can I say young at this stage? You know, coming into this season, we talked about all the first-year starters because of all the graduation losses and the NFL losses for the Buckeyes. We talked about how it's a very young team. But, you know, by the end of that season, I guess you're not young anymore. You've got an entire year of playing under your belt. But still, that youngish Ohio State team played with a poise that just, you could tell it came from the spirit of their head coach. And they didn't panic. And they never felt like this has gotten away from us. They never felt like we're out of this. If Michigan made a big play, Ohio State just came right back and made one of their own. The Buckeyes did a great job, particularly late in the game, of keeping their poise. But make no mistake about it, they were outplayed for 50 minutes or so by the Michigan Wolverines. But Ohio State's poise made all the difference. Let's go back to the post-game press conference. Let's talk more about Jim Harbaugh. Let's talk about the complaining. Two questions. One, how much complaining is too much complaining before you start to lose your effectiveness? Because if he definitely had a point on a few of those penalties. But if you list six or seven or eight things wrong that the officials did, now it looks like I'm not citing a legitimate gripe. I am just finding everything I can to complain about to pass the blame for the defeat onto someone else instead of taking it for ourselves. How much is too much whining? And question two, is it really whining if what you're doing is working? And by working, I mean laboring. Because what I think Jim Harbaugh did a lot of in that postgame press conference was he was working the playoff committee. We beat this team in their building, Jim Harbaugh was saying in between the lines. We just beat number two Ohio State, our biggest rival, in their building, in front of the largest crowd they've ever had there, over 110,000 people. We just beat them in their place. And we got hosed by a couple of calls. We're still better than they are. We're still one of the top four teams in the country. Do the right thing and give us another shot at this. Because that, I think, is what I heard from Jim Harbaugh a little bit as well. Now, will all of that fall on deaf ears? Probably so. Because it's going to take something remarkable. It's going to take something remarkable for anything to change. But if something remarkable happens, like, for example, I expect tomorrow night, the college playoff committee is going to come out with the top four of Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Washington, which pounded Wazoo in their rivalry game. Now they got to play Colorado for the Pac-10 championship or Pac-12 championship, a Colorado team that has just been on an absolute roll ever since Michigan beat the snot out of them way back in week number three. If Colorado beats Washington and knocks Washington from number four down, who shall ascend to the number four spot? Shall it be the Big Ten champion, which will be decided when Penn State plays against Wisconsin in Indianapolis? Or might it be the team that beat both Penn State and Wisconsin in this season, head-to-head, the Michigan Wolverines? Could they, if Washington stumbles and fumbles and bumbles against Colorado, and Michigan falls only as far as five? Because in reality, can you make Michigan at 10-2? Can you drop them any further than five? Can you take a 10-2 Michigan team and put them behind a 10-2 Wisconsin team that Michigan beat? No. Can you take a 10-2 Michigan team and put them behind a 10-2 Penn State team that they beat? No. I expect tomorrow Michigan to be no lower than five. It would then take a stumble by either Washington against Colorado in the Pac-12 or by Clemson in the ACC title game. If either one of those two things happens, there is a void in the top four. And now Michigan is sitting there at five, poised to slip right in. Unless what we discussed all last week comes back into the equation. The conference championship question. We talked all last week about whether or not the committee could promote an Ohio State team that did not even win the Big Ten East. Let's say Penn State wins the Big Ten championship against Wisconsin. They didn't win the Big Ten East, let alone the Big Ten championship, and lost to that eventual Big Ten champion, Penn State. Could they possibly put Ohio State in over the Big Ten champion Penn State team? That's what we said all last week, right? Well, now the answer is, could the committee take two Big Ten teams and either one of them be the Big Ten champion? Neither one of them be Penn State? Or if Wisconsin beats Penn State in the Big Ten title game, neither one of them be Wisconsin? Could they possibly take Ohio State and Michigan? And the answer is yeah, they could. Because A, Ohio State beat Wisconsin, Michigan beat Wisconsin. And B, Ohio State is already in, so the Penn State loss doesn't matter anymore. But Michigan pounded Penn State. They can't really take Penn State over Michigan either. Not to mention the good old eye test, because from what I saw, my eyes told me on Saturday was that two of the three best teams in college football were on the field in Columbus, Ohio. They are Ohio State and Michigan, and along with Alabama, to me, they are the most complete and best team in college football. And if Wisconsin stumbles or Clemson, now, by the way, I wouldn't put Michigan in there now, just having said all that. But if Washington does its job and beats Colorado and holds serve, and if Clemson does the same thing in the ACC title game, well, then there you go. Your top four are pretty much, it's hard to argue with it. But if anybody stumbles, I really think it would be a Michigan and Ohio State potential rematch. That would be something to see in the playoffs. All right, there you go. I broke it all down the best I could. I still have much, much more to say, but obviously not a ton of time to say. We've got to get a bottom of the hour sports center. Then we're going to have a little Ohio State, Michigan roundtable. We're going to talk to Luke Zimmerman of LandGrantHolyLand.com, a Buckeye website on SB Nation, and Drew Hallett of MazeAndBrew.com, also an SB Nation site. We'll kind of have a little roundtable discussion of what happened Saturday and what happens going forward right here, coming up on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The fishing, I'm bitterly disappointed with the fishing today. That spot, the graphic display is the interference penalties. The one not called on us, on Grant Perry, clearly was being hooked before the ball got there. And the previous penalty they called on Delano Hill, the ball is uncatchable and by the receiver. See, I'm bitterly disappointed in the officiating. Can't make that any more clear. It was not my view of the first down was it was that short.
The question is, to whom was he trying to make that more clear? The media? To fans? To his players? No, I don't think so. I think he was trying to make it very, very clear to one group of individuals, 13 people, specifically the College Football Playoff Committee. Jim Harbaugh whining or working the committee in the post game. All right, more analysis and reaction now of the game, one of the best games in the history of the storied rivalry. We've got a little roundtable set up here, and this should be an awful lot of fun. Representing the Ohio State fan site, LandGrantHolyLand.com, a part of SB Nation, is Luke Zimmerman. Hey, Luke, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great.
Great to have you on our program. And you are joined by Drew Hallett, representing Maize and Blue by way of MazeAndBrew.com, another SB Nation site for the Wolverines. Hey, Drew, how you doing?
Doing good, Bob. How about you?
Outstanding. Jim Cushland is here as well. Guys, I just think this is the best way to have a conversation like this, is to talk to people from both schools. What an amazing game. The one thing I think we can all agree on, Urban Meyer, we played a clip earlier from his postgame, and he said he's just so happy that the nation can see the Big Ten in such a manner as this, playing this type of a game with two great programs, two great storied rivals, in a double overtime thriller with so much on the line. This is great for the Big Ten. Let me start off by asking you both this question. Was it a first down or not? Luke Zimmerman.
Well, of course I have to say yes, right?
Now,
I think, another site in the Michigan space had a post from a reader that was about as Zapruder film as I think you can get. And I think he barely got it. In real time, it didn't seem that controversial. I know, say what you will about Kirk Herbstreit, he tries overly hard to be objective. Neither he nor Chris Fowler had any problems with it. In real time, I didn't think it was short. I think when it's that close, it's so hard to tell. I think the ruling on the field of not being able to overturn it because you genuinely can't tell is probably the right one. That's what the line judge saw. You know, conspiracy theories or not, I think just whether he actually got it in actuality, I think is something we may never know. But I think in terms of the call on the field, I think that was probably the right decision.
All right, Drew Hallett, make your case. Did he make it or was Jim Harbaugh right?
In real time, I didn't think he made it, but it is one of those plays, again, as Luke mentioned, where it is that close. It's not as if it was, you know, a half yard short or it was right there. It was inches. It was inches. And it's one of those plays where it's pretty much whoever that the refs initially spot it, that's how it's going to be. That's not the kind of play where it's going to be reviewed on a challenge, especially when it comes to spotting the ball. You need a lot more, I would say, convincing evidence, especially in a review to overturn it. So it was always going to be one of those, however, whatever they called it on the field, that was the play that was going to stand. And that's exactly what happened. It just became down to, you know, an inch
hold
or two.
On,
and
hold
how
on one second, guys, here.
You know, as I'm thinking about this too, guys, real quick, the one thing that jumps out at me, and Jim Kushlin here on this one, is regardless of what side you fall on, whether you think he made it or he didn't, and all the reviews that happen, is anybody else as surprised as I am that in throughout this entire sequence that nobody thought to bring the chain gang out? Like, at all. I was still surprised by that. No matter what side you fall on this, anybody... Any of you guys surprised?
No, there wasn't a reason to bring out the chain gang because that was the start of the overtime possession. They placed the ball on the 25-yard line. So the first down marker is the 15-yard line, the very beginning of it. So I saw some people asking that question, in the past 48 hours or so. But because of the situation that the ball being placed at the 25 to start the overtime period, the chain's more necessary there. It's the 15-yard line on the white part, and that was pretty much the marker right there.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. It's just something that as I watched that whole thing happen a couple times, that I at least was just, why aren't they at least doing that? As we're having a fun roundtable discussion on the Ohio State Michigan, Luke Zimmerman of LandGrantHolyLand.com, Drew Hallett of Maize and Brew. Drew, I want to go to you with this one because we were kind of thinking it all through last week. I personally thought he was going to play because so far this season you can't put anything past Jim Harbaugh. I mean, remember back to the beginning of the season, we didn't even know who the quarterback was until literally they came out of the tunnel on opening day. So I'll start with this one with you, Drew. How surprised were you that Wilton Spate was out there right from the get-go?
I wasn't that surprised. I know that there had been reports after the Iowa game that he may have been out for the season, or at least out for the regular season. But as the week was leading up to the Ohio State game, there was seemed to be more promising reports that, you know, that it wasn't a broken collarbone, that he was going to be able to play, and that he was practicing and working toward it. So I wasn't as surprised by kickoff that he was going to be the starter and playing. It was always going to be one of those things where Jim Harbaugh wasn't going to, you know, reveal who was going to be the starter beforehand. But, you know, little things leaked here and there about him practicing. And based on how John O'Korn had performed in against Indiana, it pretty much had seemed like that Michigan needed Wilton Spate, or at least as close to 100% Wilton Spate as it could get, to beat Ohio State, and that he was able to play definitely boosted Michigan's chances. And if you want to talk about the performances of Wilton Spate too, I mean, he was maybe the difference maker both ways in regulation. He was, you know, really the reason why Michigan's offense was moving and getting them in position to win that game, but he was also his crucial mistakes, the two picks, and the fumbled snap that also allowed Ohio State to stay in the game as well. So it went both ways, but he definitely had a huge impact. But I wasn't surprised that he started.
21 points of an impact. Bob, back with you guys again. I don't know what our tech glitch was there for a second, but we're talking to Luke Zimmerman of LandGrantHolyLand.com, Drew Hallett of MaizeAndBrew.com, kind of a little aftermath roundtable. The 21 points that Wilton Spate was responsible for, to me, is the story of this game. You know, Jim Harbaugh is doing his level best to make the story about the officiating. Felt like we outplayed him, we beat him, but they screwed us on a couple of calls, including the spot. And the spot, I can't, because I agree with what both of you guys said. You can look at it, you know, five times and see something different each time as to whether they got it. So since they called it a first down, it is a first down. They're not going to change that on review. But there were a lot of other things he had a very good point on, but he's taking away the attention of the turnovers, the attention of the fans and the analysts from the turnovers. Wilton Spate's pick from his own end zone, then the other one deep in its own territory that led to their only offensive touchdown in regulation, the Buckeyes, that is. And then, of course, the fumble on the 2-yard line. Those were the plays that lost the football game. Now, it's hard to blame a guy who's playing courageously while he's out there, you know, with an injured shoulder, collarbone, or whatever it is that they won't tell us. It's hard to blame the guy, but at the end of the day, Michigan outplayed Ohio State, I believe, for about 50 minutes and really, you know, lost the game on those three essential plays. Luke, your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think for all the conspiracy theories and then I just think the politicking that you really shouldn't be unexpected from, I don't think that Harbaugh is being unclassy or anything like that, like Ohio State fans may want to say. I think he's playing the same marketing game that he's been playing since he got the head coaching job at Michigan. He's packaging his program. He's giving himself, you know, built-in plausible deniability on the recruiting trail. We've already seen recruits tweet his talking points verbatim. It works. So you know, not to get into politics or anything, we had a presidential candidate that had some success kind of packaging things his way, and I think Harbaugh is, you know, on some level obliged to make sure his message isn't getting lost even in defeat. So that's, you know, I think that kind of is what it is, but in the same light, you know, the to me, the controversial calls, the officiating, you know, they're definitely, certainly with some of those pass interferences, those were much more egregious to me than the spot or, you know, whatever else you want to surface. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I think with Michigan leading 17-7, I don't have the exact stats in front of me. I'm away from my desk right now. But I think, like, after they had a 17-7 lead, they only gained, like, 30 yards or something ridiculous like that for the rest of the game. So certainly Ohio State's defense, I think, deserves a lot of credit. It's not just Golden State making mistakes. He did make some. I think one of the interceptions was actually kind of interesting. Jerome Baker was screened by the official. So as tall as Spade is, he just didn't see him. So he throws the ball. It happens, bang, bang. The Malik Hooker one, you know, you could probably put some blame on him. But also just, you know, he had a fumble. It was probably as much of a snap as it was anything else. So just some tough breaks. I don't, you know, I think Michigan did control their destiny, certainly in the fourth quarter, and they made some mistakes and weren't able to recover from it. But, you know, I don't think you blame the officiating or blame the Golden State personally.
Luke, that's Luke Zimmerman. Let's go back to Drew Howell at AmazingBrew.com. I started tweeting during the early part of the fourth quarter that Ohio State is going to win this football game, even when Michigan was still up. And the reason I said that is because I saw a change in Wilton Spate after he got driven into the ground on that shoulder early in the fourth quarter. He did not look the same as he did throwing with confidence, stepping up in the pocket, standing in, knowing there might be a hit coming, but none came really very early on. They started to physically beat on him a little bit in the, late in the third and certainly early in the fourth, and I saw Wilton Spate, at least in my mind, getting rid of the ball a little more quickly, being afraid to take that shot, not even extending to make his full throw. We know he was limited in motion because of the injury anyway, but it didn't limit him in the first half. But late in the game, I saw a guy kind of like short-arming it a little bit, making sure that he could get both arms down to protect himself against a shot, because I think he was playing in some serious pain, and when Ohio State started to hit him, he wanted nothing to do with getting hit anymore. Did you see it that way? Did you see, because what Luke just said about the yardage is exactly right. They were moving the ball through the air and on the ground for the first, you know, 2.5 quarters or so of this football game, and then they got completely bogged down, I think in part because Ohio State's defense, but also just in part because of the physicality that Ohio State's defense started to use with Wilton Spate.
I don't know if I fully agree with that. I would say that you may be onto something there, just because, you know, one of the plays that I think back to in the fourth quarter is Michigan had, I think it was 3rd and 5, or it was 3rd and medium. It was their final offensive drive before Ohio State went down to kick the game-tying field goal. And Spate had a, you know, Darbo on a slant. Ohio State had kind of had let that open, and he throws the ball slightly behind Darbo. Darbo gets his hands on it but isn't able to reel it in. Michigan has to punt. Ohio State goes down, kicks the field goal, sends it to overtime. If Michigan gets that, you know, maybe they run off another 2 minutes of the clock, and then as opposed to being 5 minutes left or 3 minutes left, they either run it out or Ohio State doesn't have as much time to, you know, try to tie the game or win it in regulation. But I really feel like a lot of Michigan's issues in the fourth quarter were not so much on Spate as it was on the offensive line in particular. That was really the one area where you could see that Michigan was struggling, especially in the second half or in the third, fourth quarter, even in overtime. I think Michigan tried to go more conservative with their play calling. I didn't think they wanted to put it on Spate's shoulder. They wanted to be able to run the ball, run the clock, get first downs. And Michigan's offensive line did not block very well. They did a tough time keeping Spate clean.
Okay, let me pause you there, Drew. Let me pause you and ask you to expound upon that. I agree with everything you just said. They got more conservative in their play calling, but was it by design and just strategery, if you will? Or was it, you know, again, that maybe they knew that Wilton really didn't have it anymore and couldn't take any more shots, and that's why they went more conservative, because they didn't want to expose him?
I mean, it could be both. I don't think it's mutually exclusive. I mean, you look at Michigan, they didn't take any deep shots downfield because I think they weren't sure if Spate had the full range of motion to maybe throw that kind of ball.
Okay.
And then maybe didn't want to expose Michigan's offensive line to having to pass protect for that long as well. So, but I also think it's both. You know, Michigan has gone to that type of strategy in these situations. And I was tweeting about this, you know, on Saturday and on Sunday. And, you know, there's been times when Michigan is under Jim Harbaugh when they've been in close games with, you know, a close lead late in games, where they have been much more conservative, running the ball on first down, running the ball on second down, and then throwing it on third. And
you know, they haven't been able to put teams away. You know, you think back to the Michigan State loss again in 2015. You think to the Iowa loss this year, the Ohio State loss again this year, where Michigan is, even Wisconsin, which they ended up winning this year, but same kind of thing. They had opportunities in each of those games to close it out with the ball on offense, and they weren't able to do it and had to put it on their defense. And it's come back to, you know, it's come back to cost them, or, you know, at least lead to losses that they easily could have won. So I do think it's strategy where in those situations, Jim Harbaugh tries to maybe be more conservative and trust his running game. And it didn't work in this situation. They weren't able to run the ball, and it gave Ohio State a chance to come back and tie it. And that's what they did.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the passing plays they did make in the first half were off play action because they were able to run the ball a little bit. And when you can't run the ball, now obviously play action doesn't work, and it all builds on itself. Drew Hallett, that was Drew Hallett, AmazingBrew.com. Let's go back to Luke Zimmerman, LandGrantHolyLand.com, a Buckeye site. Let's talk playoffs, both of you guys. Is it possible that the playoff committee could take two Big Ten teams in the Final Four, the top four, and have neither one of them be the actual conference champion? And the scenario, of course, I think a lot of people are chewing on now is that Ohio State is two, and they're going to stay two, and they will be in this thing. Michigan doesn't fall any further than five, which means a Washington stumble against Colorado in the Pac-12 championship game or a Clemson stumble in the ACC championship game puts Michigan right back into this thing. Is it possible they would do that, Luke? And would that be the right thing, leaving a Penn State or a Wisconsin, whoever wins the Big Ten title game, out in the cold?
I don't think it's possible for Michigan and Ohio State to both get in and Penn State not get in. I think there are scenarios where all three, the Big Ten champion, Michigan and Ohio State, also get in. I personally, in the, you know, mock playoff ballot I submitted to SBNation.com this morning, I had Ohio State 2 and Michigan 3. I think you even convinced me that maybe Ohio State wasn't the better team on Saturday. They certainly were the team that won, but I think Michigan really proved themselves in sort of just how they looked for the 3.5 quarters where they were doing what they did to really establish their own resume, even with two losses. The Iowa loss, I think, is what really hurt them. That's a bad loss. Even in the hostile scenario of going into, you know, that stadium at night, I think that that's going to ultimately, I think, be kind of what factors into to keeping them around the fifth spot. But yeah, if like you mentioned, that there are a string of upsets, I think, you know, SEC fans would hate it for it to be Alabama and three Big Ten teams. And I still think this is extremely improbable, but it's definitely not impossible.
Yeah, I think that's very improbable and on the verge of impossible. And by the way, you're 100% right. And that's a note I made before coming on the air today that I didn't say. And that is if Michigan does not make it into the playoff, it's not because of the loss to Ohio State. It's because of the loss to Iowa. If they were undefeated going into the horseshoe and then played that game and lost it, if they were undefeated, they probably would have been ranked number two. And then even after the loss to the Buckeyes in double OT, they wouldn't have fallen further than four, and they would probably still be in this thing regardless. What about you, Drew Hallett? Can you see a scenario in which two Big Ten teams make it and neither one of them are the conference champion?
Yes, it's very possible, and I can definitely see it. Like you, I don't see Michigan dropping any lower than five. And, you know, and then it comes pretty much this is how I see it. Well, either Washington or Clemson has to lose for a spot to open up, because the way I see it right now is that if both Clemson and Washington win, it's probably going to be Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Washington. I think that's the easiest decision for the committee.
Right.
They would still have to debate whether they would want to put in a one-loss Washington over a two-loss Big Ten team, given that, as I've talked about on the show before, that Washington's resume isn't all as impressive. But I think that's the simplest scenario for the committee. Where it starts to get crazy is when, you know, if Clemson or Washington loses. So then you start to ask, well, can you put in Ohio State and Michigan, both of them ahead of Penn State or Wisconsin, whoever wins that game? But I absolutely think you can. One of the things about the criteria that the committee will use, and we don't know exactly how much weight they place on each of it, but it's strength of schedule, it's conference championship, and it's head-to-head. It would come down to whether they place more weight on a conference championship or whether over the head-to-head, because Michigan not only beat Wisconsin 14-7, they also beat Penn State by 39 points, and they have both wins over that. And the other thing, too, is that Michigan has more top-tier wins, so you can make the argument they have a better resume. And then it comes down to the conference championship. And the one thing, too, you can talk about, especially if, let's say, Wisconsin beats Penn State, as Wisconsin is the favorite, Wisconsin was 7-2 in the Big Ten. But the only reason why that they're competing for this Big Ten championship is because they were in the Big Ten West Division and not the Big Ten East. They're in the Big Ten East at 7-2. They're not making in above Penn State, Ohio State, or Michigan. They're third or fourth place in the division, and they're not going on. But because if they're in the other division, they have an opportunity to win the conference, and that's supposed to be the reason that sends them into the conference championship game over a Michigan team that beat them and has more top-tier wins. I don't place as much weight on the conference championships in those situations just because that you're not able to play a full round robin schedule, and the conference schedules are different. So the value of the conference championship is diluted somewhat. It's not an easy decision for the committee. We don't know what they're going to do, what they're going to favor. But can I see it where they pick Ohio State and Michigan over Penn State or Wisconsin? I absolutely can, because Michigan has the head-to-head wins and more top-tier wins.
Guys, last thing, and I'm already late, so I'm only going to have 30 seconds for each of you. But regardless, can you see, based on what you saw on Saturday, we'll go back to Luke Zimmerman first for 30 seconds, can the Ohio State Buckeyes beat the Alabama Crimson Tide based on what you see?
No, absolutely not. So, I would be, you know, I think Urban Meyer can cook up a game plan to make it competitive, but given how much trouble the Buckeyes had at home with Michigan, I think Alabama, especially defensively, is wired a lot like Michigan. The delta between the two teams from 2014, like the difference in talent, the difference in approach, was very, very small, razor thin in 2014. I think it's much wider now. So even though Ohio State only has one more loss, I would be surprised if they gave Alabama a game. I think they can. I don't know that they could beat them. So I'll just go ahead, and I know Ohio State fans hate this. I'm sorry, but I think Alabama is in a level on their own, and Michigan might even honestly be better equipped to prove more of a threat than the Buckeyes are.
That's an honest answer, I respect that. You're right, Ohio State fans might not like to hear that, but based on what we saw, I really feel like the better team lost on Saturday, and I can't see Ohio State being the better team in a potential matchup with the Crimson Tide, but they will get their shot. The Buckeyes are going to be in. Drew, can either the Buckeyes or the Wolverines, if lightning were to strike and they were to make it into the Final Four, could either one of them beat the top team in the country?
Could they? Yes. I would give Michigan, I would say that Michigan has better equipped to beat Alabama. One thing about Ohio State is that they haven't been a very explosive team all year, and they've been very methodical in terms of their running game and trying to move the ball, you know, 5-6 yards at a time on the ground. But just like Michigan's defense, Alabama's defense is one of the best at stopping those kind of offenses. And if you're not able to get big plays against Alabama's defense, you're going to be in trouble. And I think that would really submarine Ohio State. The thing is, Michigan, the problem for Michigan is that their offensive line would have just a really, really tough time dealing with Alabama's front seven. But I think Michigan is more equipped just because of Michigan. I think Michigan has the better defense. And I think Ohio State's offense will have a tougher time with Alabama's defense. But either way, this Alabama team is playing at a level that we haven't seen, I think, in quite some time. They're just steamrolling through opponents. They're playing excellent, excellent football. And they're going to be a sizable favorite against anyone they face the rest of the
way. I think that's fair to say. Whether it be Clemson or Washington either, I think that would all be very, very true. Luke Zimmerman of LandGrantHolyLand.com of the Buckeyes. Drew Hallett, MaizeAndBrew.com of the Wolverines. Guys, really fun. Great game, obviously, Saturday. Really fun conversation today. Thanks for being a part of it, both of you guys.
Appreciate it, Bob.
All right, guys.
Thanks so much.
Have a good one, guys. Enjoy the week to come, and championship Saturday, and we'll see where things shake out next week. We're going to get a timeout now here for the top of the hour. We got a Sports Center coming your way, and then we got you. I want to open up the phone lines. Buckeyes, Wolverines, did the best team win on Saturday? That's question number one I want you to think about answering. And number two, do you think both of those two teams should be in the top four and go to the playoff? What do you think about it? Let's have your phone calls at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, right here on The Ticket.
First and 10, Wolverines at their own 6. And in the end zone is Spate, looking to throw, fires it up the middle, intercepted. It's picked off and running it down
Hooker.
The right side, and into the end zone is Malik Hooker. His third touchdown of the year, Malik Hooker. Ohio State's 7th pick 6 of the season. And the Buckeyes get the first touchdown of the game on defense.
I guess that you give the ball to Hill and run it right up the middle.
Here's Hill, number 80. Smith is to his left. Hill again, pure power football, muscles in for the Maize and Blue. Spate drops back, looks in the flat, and delivers it in a touchdown. Khalid Hill has been a power runner all season. Spate steps up, delivers, intercepted. Picked off by Jerome Baker. And Baker's got blockers. Tackle inside the 15, the third Michigan turnover. Weber dives for an Ohio State touchdown.
Tyler Durbin, out to try a 24-yard field goal that will tie the game. Here's his kick. It's in the air, and he nails it. Tyler Durbin to tie the game with 1 second to play. Snap to JT Barrett. Fakes a pass, runs it straight ahead, untouched into the end zone. JT Barrett, 7-yard touchdown run to give Ohio State a lead here in overtime.
This is it. Spade across the middle. What a catch. It's the ball game if they can't get half a yard. Keeper. Hit. Right at the marker. The spot will decide it. Delano Hill got there. It looks like it's a first down. It is.
McLaurin and Brown wide right. Weber and Samuel in the backfield with Barrett, who feeds it to Samuel. Sweeping left side. 10-5. Touchdown, Curtis Samuel. And the Buckeyes win it in overtime. A game that they trailed by 10 points. Double overtime. Curtis Samuel sweeps around the left side for the touchdown run to give Ohio State a 30-27 victory over the University of Michigan. And the Buckeye fans spill onto the field in what has been one of the craziest of afternoons in this historic stadium.
There wasn't a first down. The fish got bitterly disappointed with the officiating today. That spot, the graphic display is the interference penalties. The one not called on us on Grant Perry clearly was being hooked before the ball got there. The previous penalty they called on Delano Hill, the ball is uncatchable and by the receiver. See, I'm bitterly disappointed. My view on the first down was that it was that short. But our guys have worked incredibly hard. They have done everything that they could, and they've done it so very well. I'm very proud of our players, yes. Two penalties called all day. Multiple holding penalties let go. Multiple false starts. The official on my side is supposed to be watching that. He's concerned about whether our coaches are in the white or not in the white. He wants us not on the field. Their coaches were on the field, practically in the huddle at times. So now I'm bitter.
My AD in Florida actually used to always tell me, he said, if you can't get that far, you're not a championship team. And we used to talk about that all the time. And I agree with him. That actually crossed my mind. If you can't get that, we're not a championship team anyway. And I know it's a very good defense, a rugged defense, but I got players like JT Barrett. I think we're one of the top teams in the country. But once again, I don't really know that. We go week to week, and I love my players. It's awesome. I've said that many, many, many times. I'm very humbled to be a part of it. You can't ask for better efforts for both. They have great players. We have great players. They're a very well-coached team, so are we. And it's good for the country to see the Big Ten in action like that.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, Urban Meyer said it again, so I guess I'll say it again. Same thing as last hour. He's right. It really is good for the rest of the country to see the Big Ten in action like that. What an unbelievable game. And we continue to focus on it here in hour number two because why not? What else is there to focus on? The National Football League? We already talked about the wonderful Thanksgiving Day win by the Detroit Lions on Friday's program. There's no reason to talk about the winless 0-12 now on a 15-game regular season losing streak for the Cleveland Browns. No reason to get into that, and the NBA can wait for a day. So we're going to continue talking about Ohio State and Michigan. And I want to ask you directly at 866-240-1065, if you're a Michigan fan, make the case right now, based on what happened yesterday, that your team should still be in the hunt for the college football playoffs. Make that case. If you are an Ohio State fan, I want you to tell me whether you think what you saw on Saturday indicates that Michigan is one of the top four teams in the country and should also be in the running for the one of those top four playoff spots. Do you think that the best team won the game? And I got to tell you, I said this a little bit when talking to, by the way, great segment there. Thanks to Jim Kushner for setting it up with Luke Zimmerman and Drew Hallett from two SB Nation sites, one Buckeye-related, one Wolverine-related. I said to both those guys, for 50 minutes or so, counting the overtimes, I mean, honestly, I don't believe that Ohio State beat Michigan. Michigan outplayed the Buckeyes. And I know Ohio State fans hate hearing that. I hate saying that, but Ohio State did not outplay Michigan. It was the other way around. Michigan beat itself with the two interceptions, neither of which took some spectacular play by the Buckeyes. It was just really two poorly thrown balls by Wilton Spate right to Buckeye defenders. And then, of course, Spate fumbled the snap, or the snap never got to Spate. Either way, it's a quarterback-center exchange that just cannot happen at any level of football. On the two-yard line going in, Ohio State was lucky to be only down 10. you know, as we got down to the nitty-gritty halfway through the fourth quarter, because Michigan was really handling them on both sides of the line of scrimmage. So I just kind of want to, you know, lay it out there. While Jim Harbaugh did a lot of whining and a lot of complaining, and you heard some of that there again in the top of the hour montage, just in case you missed everything he was complaining about, let me give you this 36 seconds again.
The fishing, I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today. That spot, the graphic display is the interference penalties. The one not called on us, on Grant Perry, clearly was being hooked before the ball got there. And the previous penalty they called on Delano Hill, the ball is uncatchable and by the receiver. See, I'm bitterly disappointed in the officiating. Can't make that any more clear. It was not, my view of the first down was it was that short.
So I had some friends texting me, you know, fellow Buckeye fans saying, what a whiner, what a baby. Harbaugh needs to lose with more class. He needs to stop sitting up there and sounding like such a jackass and yada, yada, yada. And I get it. It sounds very whiny. Want to know why? Because it is very whiny. However, there might be method to that whiny madness. As he said at the very end, and I don't think this was for the purpose or for anybody's ears, but the 13 members of the College Football Playoff Committee that will decide the championship participants, when he said, I can't make that any more clear. I want you to understand what I'm saying here. I want this to be clear.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating.
Yeah, that I am very bitterly disappointed in the officiating, and I want you to understand that, committee, that the officiating is what cost us this football game, not Ohio State being better. Understand that. I want this to be clear, and I think he's trying to be clear to them so that they will give the Wolverines another look. Now, you might argue, hey, there's a good reason for that. Maybe they do deserve another shot at this. Because you're talking about a bunch of two-loss teams anyway. If Washington stumbles, and they're going to be number four tomorrow night, if they stumble in the Pac-12 championship game against Colorado, they'll be a two-loss team. Colorado's already a two-loss team. You're going to be talking about and if either Clemson or Wisconsin were to stumble. Washington. If either Clemson or Washington is to stumble, then you know one of them will be a two-loss team, and now it's which two-loss team makes it. Two-loss Oklahoma? Probably not, given the strength of schedule in the Big 12 this year. Would it be the two-loss Clemson team if they were to lose? Probably not. Would it be the two-loss Washington team? And when you look at their bodies of work, probably not. It probably would be the two-loss Michigan team that would be back into it. Now, here's the other part of this. I asked both Luke and Drew if they feel like Ohio State would be able to beat based on what they just saw in the rivalry game. And really, if you go back to the way they looked the week before against Michigan State as well, would they be a real, you know, threat to win the national championship against Alabama? And you know, even Luke, who's you know, is trying to be as homerish as he can, I'm sure he would like to say, heck yeah, they can. But he said no. He said the gap is so big between Ohio State and Alabama, and the gulf in talent, or I think he said, what word did he use? Channel, maybe? He said in... or no, the delta, he said, which is even better. We know our water rate ways around here. The delta between the talent gap in 2014 and this year's team is too huge to really overcome. He said they can't do that. And guess what? That could very well become the first round matchup. How, you say? Well, again, since we're doing hypotheticals here, and we'll go to the phones in a second. If you're on hold, bear with me. But hypothetically speaking, let's suppose in the Pac-12 championship game, which is on Friday, right, Jim? That game's on Friday.
Yes, that is a Friday night game. We'll have it for you here on the ticket, by the way.
Glad to hear that. Thank you for that programming note. If Washington blows Colorado out and is really impressive, and if Clemson blows out your Hokies in the ACC final and looks really, really impressive, it's not out of the realm of possibility that those two conference champions might kind of edge past an idle Ohio State team because they don't even get to the Big Ten championship game and push Ohio State down to number four, in which case first round, Bama Buckeyes. So that is a possibility, just as it's a possibility that Ohio State stays at number two because Clemson isn't very impressive and, say, Washington loses, creating a spot in the top four that could very well be filled by the Michigan Wolverines. My dream scenario would, of course, be for Ohio State and Michigan to be able to play one another in one of those games, either a semifinal or a championship. Probably not bloody likely, but if, you know, and I think Drew Hallett laid it out, that if there is to be anybody that's built or equipped well enough to hang with Alabama, it might be Michigan. And if only for, you know, the purposes of defense against defense, because those are two of just the most dominating rock-ribbing defenses that you're going to find in this country this year, maybe the two best. But if somehow in a hypothetical 1-4 matchup, Michigan at 4 would be able to take down Alabama, and then let's just say hypothetically that the Buckeyes at 2 would take apart number 3 Clemson, can you imagine anything quite like the national championship game being contended by and contested by the Michigan Wolverines and the Ohio State Buckeyes? Oh, my God, that's just too much to dream for any Big Ten fan. All right, Brandon in Toledo is up on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Brandon, thanks for hanging in there while I went through that little spiel, but I had to lay all that out there on the line. Did the best team win on Saturday, Brandon?
No. For three quarters, maybe a little less than three quarters, Michigan played better. Sloppy, but they were the less sloppy team in terms of how the entire game was going. And then the interception, the second interception, and from there, it kind of went downhill. Michigan wasn't able to make plays running the ball. State was a little bit inaccurate. And Ohio State made plays when they had to. Ohio State did a good job of closing the game. And I think, in my personal opinion, Harbaugh kind of started playing not to lose, whereas Urban Meyer was sort of roll up his sleeves and, okay, at all costs win the game.
Yeah, well, he had no choice, of course. He had to pull everything out because they just were not able to move the ball against Michigan. He had to do something different. And you're right, even Drew Hallett, who's a Michigan supporter, you know, there at MaysonBrew.com, pointed out that this has kind of become a little mini MO of Jim Harbaugh in a couple of very difficult defeats against Ohio State, obviously against Iowa, and even going back to a game last year. I can't recall which one it was.
Michigan State.
Oh, it was Michigan State. That's right.
It was three leads in the fourth quarter and three losses in the final play of the game.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about. So there is a little, you know, kind of a trend, if you will, when it comes to that. I still believed, and this is just my opinion, I have no way to prove it or not, I just saw a different Wilton Spate. I wondered if Jim Harbaugh didn't get conservative there because he knew that Spate was in some trouble. He was already in pain when he started because of the injury that caused him to miss last week. But he's playing through it, and he wasn't really taking any shots in the first half, delivering the ball quickly and accurately. But then once they started to get to him late in the second half, or actually late in the third quarter, and certainly in the early part of the fourth, they started to put some shots on him. I just saw a guy who didn't want to be back there throwing the football, and I wondered if Jim Harbaugh kind of went into a shell a little bit out of protection for Wilton Spate.
I agree, and I have another point I wanted to make, too.
What's that?
Because the playing not to lose and the playing to win. And we saw Spate right after the touchdown in the first overtime. He wanted to go for two. Now, in my personal opinion, we obviously know what happened. I would have liked them to go for two, win it or lose it right there. Had it been reversed, I fully 100% in my heart, not no doubt in my mind, think Urban Meyer goes for two.
Do you really?
I think so. I think just the way Urban Meyer's mindset was, and once again, I go for two based on what you know how the game has went. If you're the whole time, the whole game, you're there, and you see that officiating hasn't went your way, and Ohio State's now starting to move the ball, you have one shot from the 2-yard line. You win, or you go. You win, and right there with one play, or you go home with the loss right there in one play. You control it with your opportunity. Don't leave it to nobody else. Take your chance.
And let me throw this out here to you guys, if I may, as well. You know, we're talking about some of Urban Meyer's play calling and going for the win. Let's not forget, and to me, this is the explanation of the going for it right there on fourth down, that second-to-last play of the game, the one that's drawn a lot of the controversy. He to a degree, had no choice. I mean, his kicker missed a 20-yarder, for goodness sake, earlier in this game. He wasn't about to put him back out there. So at some of these levels, I think Urban was forced to do some of these things. He couldn't rely on his kicking game the few times he was able to move the ball. I think that was a factor in this, too.
Let's not forget one key play. Third and 6 or 7, a swing pass to Curtis Samuel that he ran back 5, 6 yards, and I was so critical. I love Jabril Peppers, but I just got to talking to my brother about this on the phone. He took a half a second off on that play, and that was probably the difference in him making the play, because it should have been, like you said, in my opinion, fourth and five, fourth and maybe six, and a 46 or 47-yard field goal. Curtis Samuel makes probably the play of the game. And to be honest with you, if Delano Hill, if you watch the play over, I believe it's Delano Hill, if he doesn't cut him off, Samuel scores on that play. If you watch
that
it from the back.
That was a phenomenally athletic play by Curtis Samuel, and kind of a crazy one, too, because he really ran a took a big risk there in a gamble by giving up so much ground in order to reverse field and come back and do that. He almost just ran himself right out of field goal position and everything else. But he made an amazing athletic play. Michigan did
not have
a play on defense or an effort.
Exactly.
On defense
I think Peppers took a second off. I have one more point, and it has to do with the committee. The committee, so many times as over the couple of years since they've instituted the playoff, has always, we want the four best teams. And we're not going to get it because, to me, it's obvious Michigan, through the course of the season, is one of the top four teams. But what we're going to have, especially if Washington and both Clemson win, because to me, Clemson hasn't looked like a top four team all year. It's about the resumes, and it's about where you are, where college football and all them see you at the beginning of the season. Because look at Colorado. Michigan doesn't get enough credit for that Colorado win, and now it looks like a pretty good win.
I think that I disagree with the last part. I agree with what you said about the beginning, but I disagree. I think they're getting a lot of credit for the Colorado win now. When people talk about the Michigan resume, they talk about three wins over three top 10 teams, which of course are Penn State, Wisconsin, and Colorado. So I think the more they've gone on this year, the more people have been impressed by that Michigan win over Colorado. But having said that, you're right. It's not often going to be about the four best teams, because if it is, Michigan probably would be in. And here's something else. I heard a really, really great description. And, Brandon, I got to let you go there, my friend, so I get some other people on the radio. But I heard a really good description about this earlier today. And I can't remember who it was or I'll have to paraphrase him because I can't quote it, obviously. But don't think for a second that a Penn State or a Wisconsin not getting in, if it comes to that, means that the committee doesn't care about conference championships. Because that's not true. Because if Washington does get in, it's going to be because they're the Pac-12 champion. And that's it. Because nothing in the Washington resume suggests that they belong in one of the top four teams. Nothing with the eye test suggests that they're one of the top four teams. They would be getting in because they're a conference champion. I would say the same thing is true of Clemson. Clemson, you know, being a title game participant last year certainly gives them an edge going into this season, as you said right from the beginning. It's why, and I say this every single August on the radio, there should not be a preseason ranking by anybody, AP, coaches, poll, or anybody else, until the first Monday of October. Let them play a month and see what everybody really has, not based on their reputations from a year ago. To me, excuse me, the eye test doesn't tell me that Clemson is one of the top four teams. But they'll be going in because they'd be a Power Five conference champion. In fact, three of the four that get in under that scenario would be there because they're conference champions. And then only Ohio State would be, there as a non-conference champion. So in my estimation, if we are going to cast aside conference championships as a prerequisite to getting in, as we would be for Ohio State, then you can also cast it aside for Michigan. And you could also, if you really wanted to be, and I know it's really getting out there into the weeds now, but if you really want to cast it aside, you might look at the team that might be playing better than anybody in the country right now, other than Alabama, and that's USC, that suffered three losses in September and has been perfect since. And getting better since they made a quarterback change, and they beat the living daylights out of Washington, who's going to be number four. But they're a three-loss team. But if you're just going by what the committee says is who are the best four teams, in my estimation, you could do a hell of a lot worse than Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, and USC as being the four best teams in the country right now today. Number of losses notwithstanding, resume notwithstanding, conference championship or not, notwithstanding, those might be your best four. Ryan in Toledo, you're next on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Ryan, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Good, man. What's up?
To me, I think there's too much weight put on conference this, conference that, as far as championships goes. Because let's be honest here, okay? Let's just, for the sake of argument, say that Penn State had a Heisman-type candidate, okay? And they were without him for the first four games that are non-conference games. They lose every one of those games. He comes back after that, okay? They sweep the conference, okay? Now you've got a four-loss team that's technically a Big Ten champion, but they lost every one of their non-conference games. Riddle me that. You see what I'm saying? They should be going by overall record, not conference record.
Right.
You know, that's my opinion about it all. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways this puzzle could be put together, you know. But as far as whining about one call, I don't want to hear it. I'm not, whatever. You know, if you want to whine about one call, this, that, or the other, you had plenty of more opportunities in that game to really put it to Ohio State, because Ohio State was doing nothing.
Barrett was doing nothing. You know, you can argue they about one call or four calls, but the truth of the matter is,
they should have had 40 points on the board.
You outplay those bad calls if you don't throw two picks deep in your own end, and you outplay those bad calls if you don't fumble on the 2 yard line going in. So
you persevere, exactly. And finally, in closing, I know that Alabama looks like this insurmountable beast. Okay, I get that.
Yeah.
But I also remember feeling that way about the Miami Hurricanes in 2002, and that's all I got, bud.
All right, good call, Ryan. Really good call. I appreciate that. Let me squeeze in one more before our bottom of the hour timeout. Frank is in Wauseon. Frank, thanks for joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I think the better team won Saturday. Okay. I'm a Buckeyes fan. But, you know, Jim Harbaugh has got
to... I just gave you an OH, Buckeye fan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear my phone crack. I'm by myself.
I didn't mean to mess you up. Go ahead, buddy.
But you know, Jim Harbaugh has got to, you know, he's got to look his guys in the face in the locker room. And they lost that game. I mean, I think the whole thing started. He fired up the entire stadium when he got the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. He needs to look himself in the mirror as the reason they lost that game. When he went nuts and couldn't control himself, therein was the beginning of the downfall.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. There's a bit of a role that may have played. But again, I would say that passion and that, you know, stomping around and stuff is what makes his players stomp around and play with that passion. They play so differently than they ever did under Hoke or Rich Rod before him. He likes that. He likes getting them fired up. And if he gets the enemy fired up as well, that doesn't matter to him either. I don't think that cost him as much as I said earlier, just simple football plays. Wilton Spate, threw out of his own end zone and threw a pick six, which is a terrible throw. He fumbled on the goal line going in. I mean, if those plays aren't made, Michigan is probably up 17 in the fourth quarter, and they win that game going away.
Yeah, it just seemed like that just provided a spark to that offense. You know, instead of being first and goal, what, the 16 moved in half the distance a couple times on the on the offside penalty,
right,
then the unsportsmanlike conduct, all of a sudden you got a first and goal at the 4.
Yep.
If you're at the 4 versus the 16, the way the offense had been not moving the ball,
mm-hmm,
you know, I'm sorry, but we might have gone away with another missed field goal. And here, on a side note, I think the soccer team was playing somewhere in Louisiana, and that's why they had to go for it on 4th and 1. Because they were trying to find a soccer player to put shoulder pads on, but they couldn't get one because they were in Louisiana.
To kick it, yeah, that's a good one. Hey, real quick, since you're a Buckeye fan, Frank, are you concerned going into the playoff, no matter who they play? And I'm just assuming they're going to be into the playoff because they are. But no matter how it shakes out with JT Barrett, who just has not thrown the ball well in recent weeks. You know, you could say that against Michigan State, the weather had something to do with it. You know, but I mean, he's just not the same fluid, smooth thrower that he's been in the past. He really couldn't throw it well at all against Michigan. Are you worried about that going in?
No, and I think some of that's on JT, mm-hmm, but I think some of that, you look at the receivers he's lost to the NFL.
Yeah,
I mean, Michael Thomas is having a pretty stellar season down in New Orleans, and I think he was supposed to be back yet this year for a senior year.
Miller's doing some good things in Houston, too.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, you know, he lost... You know, and do we know, are the receivers running the correct routes? Are they breaking them off a little bit too early? You know, they don't have the same, communication, but, you know, they're not exactly on the same page all the time.
There's a chemistry. I get it. There's a chemistry.
Yeah, same chemistry.
There's somewhere you can read, you can see where he's going, and it sails on him, you know, and somewhere it's just behind him a step or two, and it's just like, that's kind of thing that we didn't see from JT Barrett in the past, and I just worry about it.
I remember being a lot more worried going into the national championship picture in 14 when they knocked off Altoor. You're going to play against the running clock. And when you have a dominant offense that Trotwood Madison had on Saturday night, they're not giving the ball back that often. And so you're losing time to be able to come back. And the 30-point hole where the running clock, unless some miracles happen, is really tough to come back from.
That's such a great point. We're talking with Bill Clark, who is the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio, about the loss by the Central Catholic Fighting Irish in the state semifinals. But not just, obviously, a Central Catholic. Oh, by the way, just to kind of put the lid on this, just to kind of give people an idea, maybe this is the silver lining or whatever you want to call it, but since 2012, and I just read the stat in the Blade, the actual record, you, of course, know it, but for those who don't, Central Catholic is 64-8. 19-3 in the playoffs, two state championships in a runner-up finish. That's since 2012. One hell of a run. And it will not end anytime soon because they're going to be right back at it again next year. So I wanted to throw that out there. Bill, before we move on to some of the other results, Cincinnati-LaSalle took it to Anthony Wayne. We talked about this Friday, too. Anthony Wayne was in uncharted waters for them. They hadn't played in games this big and this late in the season before. LaSalle is a playoff veteran team. That probably had a little bit to do with the lopsided score.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the neat things about Anthony Wayne is, based on what I read and what I was able to see and some of the people I talked to, a lot of times when you get that far into the tournament for the first time in the history of the school, it's like, hey, look how far we got. So let's just have some fun. Anthony Wayne didn't look at that at all that way. They looked at it and said, hey, we're good. We're good enough to be here, and we're going to make it a five-game winning streak and go home with some hardware on the first weekend in December. But as you mentioned, the Cincinnati LaSalle is a playoff veteran. They're the two-time defending state champions in that division, and you don't do that unless you've got bodies. And Anthony Wayne had a tremendous run in the playoffs, probably the surprise team in the playoffs. I would think most people would agree with that. But those kids didn't show up for that state semifinal thinking, oh, look at us, we're here, so that's the end of our season. They played as hard as they could. But Cincinnati LaSalle, as you mentioned, Bob, they've got a lot of weapons, they've got a lot of experience, and it doesn't take anything away from what Anthony Wayne and Andy Brumgard did in his first year. He basically turned things around from the standpoint that Anthony Wayne will probably be doing some things again, because this is a tremendous confidence boost for the entire program.
No question about it. And the other two, we don't have a lot of time here to finish discussing them, but for those who don't know, Marion Local 36, Patrick Henry 7 in Division 6, and that state semifinal, shocking. I think just the margin of victory there, or the margin of defeat for Patrick Henry, and then in the D7, the D7 game, as we mentioned, Minster beat Macomb 27-23. So that is it. No state championship games for the area in Columbus next weekend, but a heck of a ride for a lot of really, really great teams and a lot of great young players, including those kids from Central Catholic. An amazing run comes to an end for this season. But I imagine about a week or two from now, they'll be back in the weight room getting ready for 2017 to take that one step that they fell short of this year. Bill,
I would think that's probably true.
Yeah, no doubt in my mind. That's what Greg Dempsey's probably got, this lifting schedule on the wall, and they'll be in there after a week and maybe just resting and relaxing, and then they're going to get right back at it. Bill, great stuff all season long. We always appreciate it. We'll talk again, of course, as we get into the high school basketball season as well. Sound all right?
All right, look forward to it. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks so much, Bill. Bill Clark joining us from the fields of high school football, as we had to get that stuff to you, even though it was kind of depressing the way the season ended for so many of those teams. All right, that's it. That's all the time that we had. Don't forget, tonight is the last night of bidding, by the way, in the My Toledo online auction. Right now, 1065theticket.com. Great opportunity to save a ton of money on your holiday shopping, or if you're shopping for yourself, that's okay too, because the bidding ends tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. So get online right now. Pay pennies on the dollar for some great services and products, merchandise, etc., from our great sponsors and clients. That's at 1065theticket.com. Click on the My Toledo auction between now and 10 o'clock in the morning, tomorrow morning, and save yourself a ton of money. Thanks so much for being a part of the show today. Jim Cushman, great job as always. Stay where you are. Drive Time is coming up next right here on The Ticket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.